Before we begin the next chapter, I just want to thank you for all the amazing reviews you've written. They really warm my heart, give me the confidence I need, and help this show find new listeners. So thank you so much. And also thank you to all of my patrons. This show is commercial-free and will remain that way, but you can support my creative process by becoming a patron. Visit sonofelpodcast.com/support. It's only a little bit each month, but it makes a big difference, especially in helping me believe in myself. I love telling this story and appreciate you enabling me to keep telling it. So thank you, and enjoy the show. You're listening to Book 2 of Superman, Son of El. He is more than a story. He is more than a comic book superhero. He is more than a symbol of hope. He represents our greatest aspirations. He is everything we think we can be. And yet, even with all the strength and all the power in all of the world, he may not be able to meet his greatest challenges and redeem his family's legacy. For he is the Son of El. Chapter 10, Super Dad. In the weeks after Clark's visit to LexCorp Tower, Lex Luthor's vague threats had no recourse and were soon dismissed as Clark's busy routine persisted. Being distracted from such worries was one of several perks his schedule offered. One perk that Lana particularly appreciated was Clark's flexibility. Working on a global scale and somewhat impartial to sleep, Clark shifted his workday around his family's needs. When their sons were younger and had trouble sleeping through the night, Clark worked spottily through the day. As they grew bigger and their conflicts became more frequent, he shifted his schedule back to working at night. His ecological projects had dramatically slowed as he focused more on tending to his trees than planting them. All too often, Superman was needed to stop poachers from stripping the lands he cultivated while they were left unattended. Oftentimes, these poachers fought amongst themselves for the rights to these forests. Clark saw them as victims of their own economy, and did what he could to help them learn to sustainably work with him and not at the detriment of the trees. He helped set up classes and programs to sustain the forest, while allocating some of the resources he offered toward helping their local economies. It was a tedious process requiring a good deal of patience, yet in comparison, these conflicts seemed to resolve themselves more easily than the fights Joseph and Jerome got into back at home. No matter how easy it was for Clark to simply grab each toddler, one in each hand, and move them apart from one another, deep down, he didn't feel it solved anything. Instead, Clark did what he could to help them foster their own accountability.
Jerome, that's not how we touch our family. Joseph, let go of your brother's hair.
More often than not, these efforts failed, and Clark eventually resorted to grabbing a hold of his two sons to put an end to their escalating skirmishes. Though this kind of intervention was mostly an inevitable outcome, Clark believed role modeling patience was the least he could do under the circumstances. He had already displayed enough regrettable behavior with his handling of the alien bounty hunter, Lobo. Yet in light of this unsureness, he was hesitant to adopt Martha's technique. Martha's approach to discipline was summarized by a stern word and a glare. It proved effective for fast results, but that was only if she could be heard by them. Should the boys' bickering fill the room, Clark did all he could to not raise his voice. In the past, during a heated moment, he spoke up with too much fervor, sending shockwaves through the house and leaving both the boys crying. Though he knew he could overpower them with his own voice, Clark feared that even in a tempered tone, it would be too much. He didn't want to scare his children into obedience. This was no different than his grandfather's relationship to humanity. Clark wanted to do better than Enlil. He wanted to be a better father. Once a fight had broken out and the moment had become heated, it was no longer time for teaching them a lesson. Clark felt they needed to learn a sense of reward for investing their time well, and he knew no better place for them to learn that than with plants. He included his sons in his gardening, getting them started working together to plant a bed of flowers near the house, alongside his own vegetable patches. They amended the soil together and planted their seeds. Clark taught them to take turns watering each day, and they did all the weeding together. Soon, these skills followed them into the home. Drew noted one night, after the boys had already gone to bed,
"This morning, Jerome heard me talking to Pete about trying to pick up some carpentry work, and that boy told me I didn't have to worry. He said as long as I tend to my garden, it'll bloom."
Pete jumped in to help tell the story.
Tell them what Joey said.
Oh, you'll love this. Joseph said, I should have someone taking turns with me tending to my garden. Pete blurted out the last part of the story.
And Jerry told him that me and Drew take care of our gardens together.
Drew concluded, those boys amaze me. Clark was proud. Getting the hang of child development took a lot of guesswork. It was nice to think he was having a positive effect. Spending most of his time with his sons, Clark saw the day of a preschooler as a constant procession of discovery and exploration. Where the twins used to simply ask their parents the names of plants and bugs and whatnot, the boys' questions grew in complexity, especially Joseph, who was showing an adeptness with words that Jerome was reluctant to express. Yet despite Jerome's silence, Clark and Lana recognized how frequently Joseph vocalized his brother's needs. It seemed the boys had an unspoken agreement for these interactions. Perhaps they were still using the sign language they had developed as babies, though it had become undetectable. However they did it, it was good to see. It reminded Clark that though their fighting was so intense, the boys still tended to each other's proverbial gardens. Late one afternoon, Martha called Clark in from playing with the boys.
You've got a phone call. It's Bruce.
Bruce? Why is he calling me on your phone?
I called him. Here, he wants to talk to you.
Clark, are you available? I have a favor to ask. Sure, what do you need? It's Alfred. I won't be home from a conference for Wayne Tech until tomorrow, and Richard and Barbara had an emergency come up. Can you bring him some dinner and maybe spend some time with him? He isn't sleeping well and could use some company. Though Bruce maintained his stoic demeanor even now, Clark could hear the strain in his voice. He did what he could to alleviate it.
Not a problem at all. I made a casserole last night, and the leftovers taste even better.
If it's half as good as Martha's, I have no doubt he'll be impressed.
Clark wasted no time heating the casserole and flew straight to Gotham. He found Alfred lying in his bed. When he entered the room, Alfred's head rocked on his pillow to face his guest. His tired expression melted into a smile with a hint of relief. He spoke with a small voice.
Master Clark, it is good to see you again, sir. You are as radiant as I remember you.
I brought some casserole if you're hungry.
Alfred sighed, smiling up at Clark.
That I am, sir. I am famished. But I am not so strong these days. I will have to ask you to feed it to me if you would be so gracious, Clark.
Clark had not been aware that Alfred had grown so weak.
Of course, Alfred. It would be my honor.
You flatter me, sir. I am no doubt the one who should feel honored. A mere mortal, taking pleasure in being fed by the hand of a god.
Nonsense, Alfred. Here, try a bite of this and tell me what you think.
Alfred slowly chewed the bite before answering.
I think Martha has outdone herself.
Oh, shucks, Alfred. I bake this one.
Alfred smiled with a deep sense of satisfaction.
Oh, well then, please, another bite.
As Alfred chewed the next mouthful, a few tears formed in his eyes and slowly rolled down his cheek. He swallowed and smiled again.
I don't know how much more I can eat, but I want at least a few more bites before I get some sleep.
I heard you haven't been sleeping much.
I haven't been, but it seems like a good time for it. Are you staying?
I am.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear it, sir.
Alfred ate only a couple more bites before drifting off to sleep. Clark stayed by his side, sitting awake, in awe of Alfred. He was a man of unusual conscience and devotion, responsible for many of the best traits his friends carried on. Not just Bruce, but Richard as well. Alfred's sleep was restful, but not long. He woke in the middle of the night, asking for water and a little ashamed as he asked Clark to help him after he soiled himself. Clark assured Alfred it was fine, though his inexperience showed, and Alfred had to coach Clark through it. When Clark lay him back in bed, Alfred asked for another bite of casserole.
Slowly, wordlessly, he ate through most of the plate as Clark fed him. After a pause, Alfred again spoke up.
I have something else to ask of you, Clark. I need something from you.
This request caught Clark by surprise.
Sure, Alfred. What do you need?
It's Master Bruce. He doesn't like to admit that he needs people. But you know him. You know how he is.
Clark thought of Bruce's stubbornness and smiled.
Yeah, I do.
I need you to look after him.
Alfred's eyes met Clark's, straight on with a matter-of-fact remorse. He continued.
I've done my best for Bruce, but my time isn't much longer. I need you to look out for him. Will you do that for me, Clark? Will you look after my boy?
Clark looked back, meeting Alfred's plea. Yeah, Alfred. You can count on me. I'll do what I can.
Alfred smiled at Clark and held his gaze before slowly closing his eyes.
I knew you would. You always have.
Alfred fell back to sleep and Clark stayed beside him all night. Not long after sunrise, Clark heard sounds in Wayne Manor. Someone was home. Moments later, Bruce walked in, instantly relieved to see Alfred was sleeping.
Thanks again, Clark.
No worries, Bruce. My pleasure. Anytime.
I appreciate the offer, but that was my last trip for a while. I should be able to stay with it myself.
Bruce flung himself, exhausted, into the chair Clark had kept warm through the night and took a large bite from the remaining casserole. In the midst of his chewing, he stopped a moment to look up at Clark from under his brow. After he swallowed, he asked,
You made this?
Clark scratched his head, blushing.
Yeah, I did.
Martha must be proud. She has quite the competition.
Clark took the compliment and said no more as Bruce finished the casserole. They chatted briefly before Clark left Bruce to decompress and get what rest he could. Alfred had only a few more weeks after that. When Clark attended his funeral, Bruce was quiet and especially aloof to everyone. He briefly thanked Clark for coming and said no more before excusing himself. Richard approached Clark as he watched Bruce go.
Thanks for coming. Sorry Bruce isn't more... I don't know. He wouldn't leave Alfred's side the last few weeks, so I did the Batman thing while he took the time off. But now, he's unfortunately more distant than usual. This would be a good time for him to open up, but he just keeps withdrawing.
Clark gave Richard a long hug before stepping back and looking at his friend with a warm smile that mostly emanated from his eyes.
We all grieve in our own way, Richard. Let Bruce take his time to open up. He'll get there.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But I wish he could... I don't know.
Richard's shoulders slumped with defeat. Barbara caught this and walked up beside him, wrapping an arm around him.
Hey, Dick, you holding up all right?
Yeah, Babs. I'm managing, thanks. We should probably catch up with Bruce. Batman is going to need to show some restraint tonight, and Batwoman will likely only make it worse.
Those two are a bad influence on each other.
Clark chimed in.
What's going on? Sounds serious.
Just following up on some Red Hood business. Don't worry about it. It'll probably be nothing.
Clark let the matter rest and the conversation turned to his kids at home, catching his friends up with Joseph and Jerome's escapades. The boys were discovering the confidence that comes with a little size and experience. Together, Joseph and Jerome's curiosity led them along the sprawling trails around the house and barn. The streak of independence became the norm over the next year as they went from 3 to 4 years old. Increasingly, the twins left their chaperones altogether to walk between the Langs and Kents each day. At first, when this habit started, Clark would fly overhead, watching the boys unseen from above. The twins were fine on their own, but Clark couldn't help himself from watching over them when he had the time. During one particular incident, the two began to argue. Jerome, feeling slighted, pushed Joseph to the ground. As Joey balled his hand into a fist and prepared to retaliate, Clark, aloft in the sky, spoke a directed whisper into his ear.
Maybe don't hit him back.
It was enough to make Joey hesitate,
Jerry paused as well, helping his brother to his feet, though not without continuing the argument.
I'm not stupid. You don't even know how to stand.
Clark surprised himself to see the fight end so easily. He made sure to sparingly use this trick so that he might catch his sons off guard and make them reassess their aggression, almost as though he were a voice of conscience, asking them to reconsider. This parenting technique was a quiet experiment at first, but when he brought it up with Lana one night before bed, she didn't like the sound of it.
I appreciate you looking out for them, Clark, but this sounds like helicopter parenting taken to a whole nother level.
What? No, I don't think so. They don't even know I'm there. And I'm not getting involved.
Oh, you're not, are you? You sound pretty involved. Whispering into their ears? They probably know you're watching. Of course they behave more.
Clark was mortified as he considered Lana's perspective. He couldn't find the words to defend himself. Lana saw his stricken face.
I mean, I don't mean to make you feel bad. Them behaving better is a good thing.
Clark decided long-distance whispering was a superpower he would use more discreetly with his children, and only when necessary. Yet for whatever remorse Lana had instilled, those weeks he had been doing it had had an effect on the twins. Fighting still incited, yet didn't escalate as it had before. This peace allowed Clark more time to tend to his arboretum and permaculture projects on the farm. Their orchard had begun bearing a small amount of fruit. It wasn't much, but it was enough that Clark began participating in Smallville's local farmer's market for a few weeks a year. His efforts planting trees around the world were also beginning to bear their own proverbial fruit, affecting a noticeable difference in local climates everywhere. New precipitation cycles were stabilizing where none had existed before. It was the beginning of a new phase in Clark's global permaculture initiative. His direct involvement was needed less than his guidance. Meanwhile, downtime around the house gave Clark the headspace he needed to write. Besides his weekly column in the Daily Planet, it was time for him to begin his next book. He wanted to take a new direction, pivoting from permaculture to economics. His next thesis would focus on sustainable economies. The ecosystem he was fostering would need protections from exploitation. During these months of research, Clark spent more consecutive days not transforming into Superman than ever before in his adult life. Without noticing, he had begun growing a beard. Lana was the first to point it out.
Are you planning on shaving that, or is this your new look?
Clark was unsure what she meant by this question. Rubbing his chin, he surmised her meaning.
I hadn't really thought about it either way, but if you don't like it...
I never said that. It actually looks quite distinguished on you. My scholarly husband. Don't you go forgetting about me while you're promoting that next book of yours.
I haven't even actually started writing it, so that's a ways off still. But what's bothering you? For real?
Well, I don't know how to put it, but something feels missing. You know?
Clark didn't know, and his guesses made it obvious.
It was a pretty cold winter. Maybe we need more blankets.
This wasn't the last time Lana hinted that something was lacking in their lives. But Clark wasn't sure how to appease her implied desire. He tried discussing the matter with Martha, yet she was entirely distracted preparing to attend a quilting convention in Danvers City. Pete and Drew would both be joining her at the event, all planning to be gone for the week. Considering how busy everyone was around the household, Clark decided to seek advice elsewhere. It had been too long since he had last paid Lois a visit. With the outline for his next book complete, he decided it was time to see his old friend. He needed her editorial approval before moving forward, and hoped she could offer some insight into Lana's perspective. To Clark's surprise, Kara intercepted him when he arrived. She explained that Lois was still in a meeting. Clark sat with his cousin instead and asked how she was doing. She shrugged, still typing while they spoke.
Same as ever. Why are you asking? It's not like you didn't see me the other night.
Well, I saw you for a minute, but you barely stopped by the farm more than once in every week or two. And mostly you just visit Martha and go.
Honestly, I've been a bit distracted writing my column. It's a lot more work than I expected. I can't believe you still do this. How do you make the time?
Practice. You'll figure it out. But I thought you were Lois's personal assistant. When did you start writing a column?
Weeks ago. I thought I mentioned it to you. When did you start growing a beard?
Weeks ago. Are you sure you've talked to me since then?
I thought I had. But I've been preoccupied, to say the least. I'm not sure if I like the beard.
Weren't you the one to suggest it years ago? You said it looked good then.
That was on Jean. He gave you a full beard. This one's still kinda not filled in yet.
Well, I had to start somewhere.
Do you though, Clark? Because...
Before she could conclude, a hum of chatter interrupted as the meeting led out and the Daily Planet staff burst out of the office. Lois welcomed Clark with a big hug and kiss on the cheek.
Hey, well, if it isn't Farmer Kent, welcome back to the big city. I hope you didn't get lost among the tall buildings.
Clark smiled, playing along.
I had to see all the tourist attractions first, but I found my way here eventually.
Kara joined them in Lois's office, plopping herself down on the couch in the corner.
Don't mind me, I'm just here to eavesdrop.
Lois sat behind her desk and motioned for Clark to sit across from her.
What have you got for me, Kent?
Clark made himself comfortable and explained his book idea, an anthology of sustainable economic models and their local applications in rural and urban communities. Before he could go into detail, Lois was pantomiming a yawn.
Are you trying to make each book more boring than the last?
What? Why would I do that?
I don't know, but I don't even think Superman can sell this one. No one likes to be told how to do their jobs, and this book sounds super preachy and kind of hypothetical.
Actually, there are plenty of real-world examples.
Save it for the book, Clark. It's my job to sell it. But you aren't giving me a lot to work with. Like, an anthology? Are you serious?
It doesn't sound so bad to me.
Well, that's why you have an editor.
Kara stifled her laughter. Lois went on as she looked over the outline Clark handed her.
This all feels half-baked to me. I know you can do better. What's going on at home? Something got you distracted?
Clark was unsure where this line of questioning was coming from.
What's that supposed to mean?
He glanced over at Kara, squinting, but she gave him a confused shrug.
I didn't tell her anything.
Lois tilted her head slightly with a smile.
What didn't Kara tell me?
Nothing. There's nothing going on. Though, now that you mention it, I did want to ask you for your advice.
Oh, here we go. I knew it.
It's not what you think. It's just... Well, I don't know what it is. Lana keeps saying something is missing, but I'm not sure what she means.
Lois shook her head with a soft tisk.
Oh, Clark. When was the last time you took her out on a date?
Again, Clark looked at Kara, wondering how much of this conversation was planned. Kara shrugged. Clark turned back to Lois.
We all go out at least once a week.
Lois laughed.
As a family? I mean, when was the last time you went out on a date? Just the two of you.
Oh, probably not since before the boys were born.
Clark, are you kidding me? They're almost five.
Kara chimed in.
It's not too late to plan a date. How about this weekend?
Clark scooted his chair back to include Kara in the conversation.
Martha and Drew and Pete are all out of town this week, so maybe not this weekend.
Nonsense. I'll make time to babysit.
Really? Aren't you busy with your new column?
Not that busy. But you have to make it a daytime date, because I have plans in the evening.
Clark smiled. Though he was unsure how much of this was orchestrated, he agreed to it.
Let me check in with Lana to be sure.
Lana's response was an enthusiastic yes. They weren't planning anything extravagant, just a day out with an early dinner. When the weekend finally came, Lois called to explain Kara would be a bit late. Supergirl had some business to attend to. Her arrival was greeted by the twins cheering. They loved their Aunt Kara and were soon vying for her attention. The two of them started a repeated chant of,
"Look what I can do!"
as they each somersaulted around the backyard. Kara kneeled down to admire their skills.
Wow, you two are both so good at rolling. If I need to reinvent the wheel, you two are the first I'll ask.
Jerome shouted with excitement at the prospect.
Really? We're gonna reinvent the wheel? Yes!
This potential project sent the boys running in laps around the house, looking for materials to make wheels out of. Lana tried to offer Kara some last-minute instructions, but Kara dismissed them and sent the couple on their way. Clark surprised Lana by signing them up for a dance class that day. She wasn't sure it was necessary.
I thought we were already getting pretty good at dancing. Are you sure about this?
I tried to find a venue to go dancing, but this was all that was happening in the afternoon.
Well, I don't mind. Maybe we can show these kids a thing or two.
Clark chuckled at her jest, but it turned out most of the class was made up of seniors. After dance class,
The two of them walked through downtown Smallville holding hands. Lana looked up to Clark with admiration in her eyes.
That was really fun, Clark.
It was. Maybe we ought to sign up for the weekly class.
I wouldn't mind doing this every week. I don't know about you, but I can certainly use the exercise.
Their conversation paused as Clark steered them into a little restaurant on Main Street. Once seated, Clark continued where they left off.
I don't know if I need the exercise, but it sure would be fun.
No, I guess you don't need the exercise. You don't seem to need sleep or food either. I sometimes wonder why you even bother to eat.
Clark silently smiled at his wife until she noticed and asked with a bashful grin.
Why?
Well, isn't it obvious? I do it to enjoy the company. I don't need food, but I sure do need friends, especially you.
Lana playfully buried her blushing face in the palm of her hand before batting her eyelashes at her husband.
Oh, shucks, Clark, you're going to make me pee my pants with all this flattery.
I'll try to take it down a notch.
I didn't say you should stop.
The two of them laughed, enjoying their meal and the pleasure of each other's company. As the evening approached, they returned home to find all was quiet in both the house and barn. Lana was the first to comment.
Are they asleep already? She must have run those boys ragged.
Quietly, the two of them entered the barn and climbed the stairs to the loft. Lana didn't notice, but Clark could sense it. They were far from alone as they entered the pitch-black room. Clark stopped them both at the top of the stairs. He was holding Lana back as the lights blazed on and the room exploded with a roar of familiar voices.
Surprise!
Kara leapt out to the front of the path. The room of unexpected guests shouted, ringing out a warm welcome.
Happy anniversary!
Among them was most of the Justice League, and then some. Lois and Jimmy were there, as well as Martha, Pete, and Drew, who had all returned from their trip 2 days early. Clark and Lana looked at each other in shock, wondering if it was truly their anniversary, though they knew that it was still a couple of weeks away. Clark turned to Kara.
How long have you been planning this?
Kara shrugged.
A couple of minutes after you left the Daily Planet?
Before they could orient themselves, a progression of hugs and greetings flooded the couple. On the brink of tears the whole time, Clark looked to Lana to see she had already begun crying with joy. Wally, the Flash, hugged them both simultaneously before bidding them goodnight.
I can't stay. Someone has to pull an extra shift to cover for this much of the league to attend a party. But you two have a great night. Happy anniversary.
No sooner than he dashed off, Joseph and Jerome ran to their parents to stand by them amidst the excitement. All at once, the Kent family was embraced in a group hug by Dinah, Oliver, and their daughter Laurel. Clark had never seen them all together before and introduced Lana to Laurel for the first time. The next to lavish their love on the Kents were Jefferson and Lynn Pierce with their daughters, Anissa and Jennifer, 13 and 11 years old. Both Ray and Michael flirted with Lana, praising her as their savior for the influence she possessed over Superman. Richard and Barbara congratulated them and apologized for Bruce's absence. Finally, Jean and Marty greeted them with little Garfield. To both Clark and Lana's astonishment, Garfield still appeared to be a baby, about a year old and still crawling. Jean Jones read their surprise and telepathically explained,
As we mentioned, we did not know what to expect from the joining of our kind. But the aging of Martians is no different here on Earth.
Lana responded, cooing to Garfield.
Well, I may be surprised, but I can't complain about getting to see this cutie take his sweet time being so adorable.
The green baby threw himself into Lana's arms, trusting her with a sense of familiarity. Throughout the night, Garfield was passed around, charming all the adults, even Ray Palmer, who seemed to be nervous around babies. Meanwhile, the unexpected audience brought Jerome out of his shell and caused Joseph to withdraw more than usual. As the night progressed, a cake was brought out, as elegant as any Clark had ever seen. For a party that was only days in the making, Lana noted how impressive the food and dessert was. Kara proudly explained how she managed it.
The Daily Planet hosted a big event yesterday, so I just added to the order and had the caterers do the rest.
Lois took this as her cue.
And you're welcome. Consider it a bonus. Hey, sweetie, do you think you can fly Jimmy and I back to Metropolis pretty soon?
After Kara left with Jimmy and Lois, the party slowly unwound. Joseph and Jerome were loopy with exhaustion, having stayed up well past their bedtime. They wouldn't admit to feeling tired, but had taken to running around the room, dodging between guests until they crashed headfirst into each other. Their howling prompted the guests to move the festivities to the front house. Clark picked up his crying kids and brought them to brush their teeth and get ready for bed. They picked out a book, but Joseph and Jerome had too many questions, and Clark never got to read to them that night. Joseph was especially curious.
Jefferson was Black Lightning? Why'd he stop?
Yeah, he was Black Lightning. But things got complicated, and Jefferson retired to keep his family safe.
Jerome stared at his father with wide eyes and whispered,
"Did you retire to keep us safe?"
"Well, that was also pretty complicated. Let's just say I retired so we could start this family. Me, your mama, and you two."
Joseph yawned and reminded his papa of the rest of their family.
"And Grandma Martha and Grandma Sarah."
Jerome added,
"And Grandpa Hank and Uncle Pete and Uncle Drew and Aunt Kara."
His words drifted off as his eyelids closed. Joseph tried to ask one last question, but muttered instead,
"How come the..."
Upon putting the boys to sleep, Clark rejoined the dwindling party. He found Richard and Barbara talking to Dinah in the kitchen. An intense story was already underway when Clark walked in. Dinah stared in disbelief, interrupting to clarify what she was hearing.
"But he didn't die?"
Barbara explained.
"At first we thought he died, but then we thought he didn't die."
Clark's curiosity was piqued.
"Who didn't die?"
Barbara answered as though it pained her to say it.
"Red Hood."
Richard corrected her. There never was a Red Hood. Dinah scratched her head, straining to put the story together.
"But you said Red Hood was back?"
Barbara looked around the room, as though she were searching to find the words.
"Okay, well, there's a new Red Hood. But the other Red Hood, the one that died but didn't die, the first Red Hood wasn't actually Red Hood."
Clark struggled to wrap his mind around this sentence. Dinah was floundering just as much to understand, and she wasn't even walking in the middle of the story. She asked for clarity, for both of them.
"Then who was he?"
Richard reluctantly answered. "Bruce thinks the first Red Hood was the Joker." Jolting upright, Clark shot a look at Richard.
"What makes him think that?"
"Because this new Red Hood, it's Jason. Bruce thinks the Joker used the pits and..." Richard caught himself mid-sentence and said nothing more of the Lazarus pits. He and Clark both knew Bruce would forbid their discussion. Clark's mind scattered in disbelief and horror. From all he knew of the pits, the madness they induced was made all the worse depending on how close to death their user was when they were submerged. Clark didn't want to believe any of this was so.
"Did you say Jason?"
Dinah stammered.
"No, wait, Jason Todd? But he did die. The Joker murdered him, right?"
They all stared in silence until Barbara dropped her shoulders, sighing.
"So yeah, anyway, that's why Bruce couldn't make it."
Dinah shivered, trying to shake off the dreadful feeling.
"Wow. Well, I'm sorry I asked."
The story had indeed sunk in the mood in the kitchen, but the living room broke out into a ruckus of laughter, soon followed by Ray Palmer announcing he had deployed one of his camping capsules. Thanks to Ray, each family had their own cabin pod. When everyone had retired for the night, Lana snuggled into Clark as they lay down for bed. Clark was still a bit at a loss from hearing the news about Jason, but Lana's purr set his nerves at ease. She gave him a good squeeze before sighing.
"I don't know what to say. It's been a magical day."
"Yeah, that was real sweet of them."
"I thought it was rather sweet of you."
"Honestly, Kara planned the whole date too."
"No, not that. You didn't notice earlier, but I was listening when you put the boys down and I don't think I say it enough, but you're a super father too."
"Oh, shucks. I do what I can."
Lana nuzzled Clark's neck.
"I know you do. And I was wondering, what do you think about us trying to have another little angel?"
Clark smiled at Lana as a tingle ran down his spine. When they first became parents, two boys felt like more than a handful, even for Superman.
But all these years later, with a little experience and the support of their community, another baby didn't feel so impossible.
Thank you for listening. I'm Isaac Bluefoot. Book 2 of Son of El was written and independently produced by myself. I really appreciate you listening and sharing the story. Telling it has become a deep compulsion for me, and I can't stop myself from refining the writing, performance, and final edit. So what I'm saying is, I really appreciate it that you notice it and mention it in your comments and reviews. Thank you so much. And thank you to all of my patrons. I can't tell you how much your support means to me. Not only do you help me cover some of the overhead, but just knowing you believe in me really means a lot. If you want to become a patron and support this production, visit sonofelpodcast.com/support. I really can't thank you patrons enough. You know who you are. Though I really value every listener, and knowing that you come back and are enjoying the story warms my heart. So thank you for listening and coming back for more. I really appreciate it. This story was inspired by the Superman and DC Comics and characters originally created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, with additional contributions by Bill Finger, John Sakella, Roger Slifer, Keith Giffen, Bob Kane, Don Cameron, Julius Schwartz, Gardner Fox, Carmine Infantino, Lou Sayer Schwartz, George Russos, Otto Binder, Al Plastino, John Broom, Dennis O'Neill, Dick Dillon, Mort Weisinger, George Papp, Gail Simone, Megan Hetrick, Tony Isabella, Trevor Von Eden, Judd Winnick, Tom Rainey, Mark Wade, Alex Ross, Gil Kane, John Ostrander, Tom Mandrake, Joseph Samichson, Joe Serta, John Conway, Bob Oxner, Arnold Drake, and Don Newton. Music in this episode was made by Beat Mechanic, Gianluca Scalambro, Blue Dot Sessions, Poddington Bear, Mello C, Sergey Quadrado, Chris Zabriskie, Meter, Till Pardiso, and Jazar. See the episode notes for details. And be sure to listen to the next episode. Chapter 11, What Heroes Are Made Of.